This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, November 30th of 2022. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear about an event happening tonight at CU Boulder, organized by Iranians on campus to update the public about the ongoing popular uprising there. Chris Moore will have his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then, herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour, then it's the Hightower Lowdown. After that, a conversation hosted by Sam Fuqua about cross-cultural communication. His guest is Le Manois, teacher, diversity trainer, and award-winning documentary filmmaker. At 9:30, The Groove Thief will be in for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead this morning, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
Federal officials debated a proposed grocery store merger between Albertsons and Kroger yesterday. The $25 billion deal would result in Kroger, King Soopers' parent company, acquiring Albertsons, Safeway's parent company. The proposed merger has raised concerns about a near monopoly within the grocery store industry at a time when high inflation is pushing up food prices. Six United Food and Commercial Worker unions went to the U.S. Capitol Tuesday in representation of over 100,000 Kroger and Albertsons employees. Unions say the merger could undermine collective bargaining power for fair pay and health care coverage for essential workers. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser is launching an investigation into the proposed merger, which is expected to close in early 2024. U.S. Marshals Service announced Tuesday they had located 11 high-risk missing children across Colorado. KGNU's Juanita Hurtado reports.
The mission to find the missing children lasted 2 weeks and was run by the Aurora Police, the U.S. Marshals Colorado District, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The three offices coordinated to launch Operation Lost and Found on November 7. By November 18, according to the Sentinel, they had located 11 critically endangered missing children that had indications of high risk factors such as sex trafficking, child exploitation, sex abuse, physical and psychological abuse, and medical or mental health conditions. Out of the 11 kids, the youngest was 12 and the oldest was 17. For KGNU, I'm Juanita Hurtado.
The City of Aurora's Police and Fire Independent Consent Decree Monitor presented a study to the city's Civil Service Commission Tuesday, suggesting that the city change the way it hires police and firefighters. According to the Denver Gazette, tensions boiled between the commission and the city's departments throughout the three-hour meeting, as the monitor cited a study and evaluation of the commission's hiring practices, which have faced criticism from Aurora's interim police chief, Dan Oates, during recent meetings. Oates told the council that the Civil Service Commission undergoes an excessive amount of time to vet candidates and hires at a much lower rate than neighboring jurisdictions, situations that are making staffing challenges worse. The commission's chairperson, Harold Johnson, argued that proposed changes removed checks and balances by the commission and would give more power to the department's chiefs that could usher in a good old boy legacy hiring culture where they give preferential treatment to friends and family. The commission will meet later this week to continue the hiring process discussion. A report by the University of Colorado Leeds School of Business says the university's commercialization activities are churning out billions of dollars in local and national economies, with much of the activity occurring in Colorado. The report says CU, over the last 5 years, has had an $8 billion impact nationally and a $5.2 billion impact for Colorado, a fourfold increase since the previous 2019 study. Commercialization activities by the university includes innovations originating at CU, which CU then owns and licenses out. Two of the university's more well-known startups include Thornton-based Solid Power, which makes solid-state electric vehicle batteries, and Boulder's Cold Quanta, which created the quantum matter machine named Albert. Boulder police have identified a man they say provoked a possible hostage situation in North Boulder Monday night and into early Tuesday morning. Officers responded to a report of an adult male and adult female held against their will at a home in the 3300 block of Broadway around 9:15 Monday night. A police department press release indicates the suspect answered the door, engaged in an altercation, and an officer discharged their firearms with no resulting injuries. The man then allegedly barricaded himself inside the residence as the adult male and female escaped through a window. Police took the suspect into custody just before 1 a.m. Tuesday morning and then executed a search warrant. The 56-year-old suspect has been charged with 3 felony counts of second-degree assault, 2 felony counts of menacing, 1 misdemeanor count of resisting arrest, and 1 misdemeanor count of obstructing a peace officer. The United States Forest Service for the Arapaho and Roosevelt National Forest announced Tuesday the agency's firefighters will begin seasonal slash pile burning later this week and will continue to do so throughout the fall, winter, and spring months when conditions allow. According to this Forest Service, fuel managers will ignite the piles of sapling and brush when they are confident conditions are safe. The ongoing monitoring for safety includes assessing snow conditions, wind, temperature, available staffing, and smoke dispersal. Forest Service officials say they will likely begin burning piles later this week in the Sulphur and Canyon Lakes Ranger districts. The public may check the Forest Service's INCI website for a list of planned areas where the burning may take place. For today's weather, the National Weather Service says skies will be mostly sunny with a high of 36 for Boulder and Denver and 33 degrees for Fort Collins. Tonight, skies will be partly cloudy with a low of 27 for Boulder and Denver and 14 degrees for Fort Collins. The current temperature in Boulder is 12 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Hannah Stewart. The University of Colorado Boulder is hosting an event tonight to raise awareness about the ongoing popular uprising in Iran. Widespread protests began after the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini in September. Iranian morality police had arrested Amini in Tehran for allegedly not wearing her mandatory hijab head covering correctly. The demonstrations have since expanded to calls for a secular democracy in the nation that has been ruled by an Islamic republic since 1979. Authoritarian theocratic rule has caused many Iranians to move abroad, contributing to a sizable diaspora population, including across Colorado's Front Range. The Colorado chapter of the National Iranian American Council estimates that there are around 10,000 Iranians or Americans with ties to Iran living in the Denver metro area. Top-notch schools and research institutions have also attracted Iranian students to the area. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with 2 Iranian academics at CU Boulder. Shaheen Rubardi is an assistant professor in environmental design and a member of the Descent by Design Collective. Shideh Dashti is an associate professor and acting associate dean for research at the university's College of Engineering and Applied Sciences.
So, Shideh, can I start with you? Tell listeners about the event that's planned tonight at CU Boulder.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. This particular event, our focus is more about how we in America and also our elected officials, how we can provide support for this woman-led revolution in Iran. This movement, well, it's, as far as we know, the first woman-led revolution that is asking for bodily autonomy. And this is an ongoing, horrible situation that is happening in Iran. It's beautiful at the same time, and it's also alarming and dangerous. What is our role? What is our responsibility? Why should we care about this movement to at least make it more costly for Iran's government to continue the execution of our Iran's youth and also across all ages and races?
Shaheen, will you tell us who is speaking at the event and how did it come together?
We have elected officials and university administrators and faculty at this event, and our goal is to draw on their expertise in terms of brainstorming ways that we can all sort of take action and participate in supporting the movement. So it was important for us to have local representation as well as ideally state representation. And so Governor Jared Polis will be there for some remarks. And then on the panel, we have Mayor Brockett, we have Councilmember Spear and Councilmember Shahrazai from Lakewood. And we have the Provost of CU Boulder, as well as Professor and Chair of the Department of Geography, Jennifer Fleury.
Is it challenging to get Americans to understand what it's like to live in a non-secular democracy where there's no separation between church and state?
You know, I think in some ways the U.S. is a secular democracy. In many ways, I don't think it is. And it seems sort of a affront to governance system where church and state are deeply intertwined, but maybe not overtly and not explicitly. And I think depending on who you are, you feel the burden of the oppression that comes as a result of that in the U.S. in different ways. So if you're a racial minority, it means something different. If you're a woman, it means something different. If you're trans, it means something different. In Iran, I think the difference is that patriarchy of the government, it is overt and it's explicit. And in some ways, that allows for there to be more solidarity and sort of transparency to that system in Iran. So, you know, a lot of people in Iran see that. They understand the oppression that they're experiencing, and they work together to, you know, navigate that. In the U.S., I think there's this funky challenge where, depending on the privileges that you carry, you may or may not realize how the lack of separation of church and state functionally oppress. And so something that's, I think, a little bit more sinister in the U.S. is this kind of lack of ability to achieve that kind of solidarity. So I think addressing them and navigating them, it seems more tricky for me than it does in Iran.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Shahin just said. When I think about, just the women's rights side of the story, Iran is such a complicated country, full of contradictions. There are some really extreme rules that have been in place for, you know, generations. For example, when you go to Iran, as soon as the airplane lands, it's announced that it's the law of the land that women have to get up and get their scarves out, and they have to cover their hair and bodies. None of us, you know, wear the hijab. We practice Islam in that way. Many of us don't. And then, well, you can, if your hair is showing, you can go to jail. I have been to jail multiple times because my hair was showing, or I was wearing, you know, sunglasses that I wasn't supposed to wear, and the morality police didn't like it. When you enter a bus, you're delegated to the back of the bus as a woman. You're not supposed to sit where the men sit. There's so many things. You know, a woman doesn't have the right to get a divorce and doesn't have the right to my custody after the divorce. At the same time, we're dealing with a highly sophisticated, educated, and wise group of women who live in a country where there is very extreme rules against them. Even in the cabinet of the most radical president, you know, his cabinet has a number of women. And, you know, in the universities, more than 50% of the university population are women. So it's just really a matter of time for this revolution get to a point of changing the system.
Many Iranians who live abroad can sometimes be hesitant to speak out against the government there, especially if they make frequent trips back and forth to visit family. Why are the two of you deciding to speak out, and why are others speaking out?
I can go first. It was a difficult decision. We go back and forth. We know that, you know, by going public, giving out comments, arranging events or protesting, we cannot go back. So that was a decision we made. We see that 10-year-olds are going out dying to defend their rights, freedom of speech, thought, religion, bodily autonomy. You know, it seems ridiculous for us to care about our safety here in the U.S.
That still seems like a difficult choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in many ways it was. I mean, we're also partners in life. So the conversations for this were really, I think, challenging, but also obvious and quick. And I think early in this movement, maybe weeks into it, people had this sense that this is something different. This is something that might, you know, this might be the thing that topples this regime. And so just talking with friends, there's a sense of like, if not now, then when? Like, this is the time to do it. And this movement needs all the support it can and any relatively, I'll say for myself, relatively minimal sacrifice.
Yeah, I'll just add that there are many. There are so many people are organizing and they're sacrificing their ability to go back. It's just very different this time.
You know, I'm reminded of Rebecca Solnit has this really good book, Open the Dark, and she talks about social movements and revolutionary social movements and how they succeed. And she has this analogy of sort of like a rhizome, like mushrooms. And there are many things that go into the success of a revolutionary movement that aren't all visible. They're sort of like below the surface. And then some event happens, like, you know, it rains. And then you have this mushrooming and the thing becomes visible and legible to all of us. I think, you know, showing up to movements, participating in teach-ins, organizing awareness, forwarding things on, you know, social media accounts, following hashtags, amplifying in any way that we can think about and educating and informing people about this movement translates to things that, you know, are sort of like the growth of this rhizome.
Is there anything else that you want to add or you think people should know?
Just very quickly, I wanted to, you know, emphasize that this is not something that Iranians or Iranian Americans are asking as a favor from our American allies. We think our struggle is your struggle. We have a lot in common. There is so much inspiration that can come out of this movement. It's such a beautiful movement. It's incredible. You know, you should see the way middle school girls even are going out and risking their lives, even younger than that. And, you know, the images that are coming out, the bravery, and that freedom is going to serve everybody. I think it's worth your support. There are a few things that are time sensitive. The most time sensitive one is that there are more than 16,000 individuals that have been arrested, many of whom are children, and many of them are university students. They are facing a grave danger of being executed, as recently signed in a letter by the parliament. So 16,000 amazing individuals, and anything you can do, any form of solidarity, signing of any documents or pressuring our elected officials not to deal with Iran's government to give them more power, for example, the nuclear deal, anything like that will be invaluable, will mean the world to us.
I've been speaking with Shaheem Rudbari and Shide Dashti. Both are associate professors at CU Boulder and are helping to organize an event called Women, Life, Freedom, Supporting the Iranian Women's Revolution. It's taking place on campus tonight at the Old Main Chapel from 6 to 8 p.m., as well as online. You can find links to the event registration and the live stream at news.kgnu.org. Thank you both for speaking with me today.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
Up next is Make Them Hear You with Chris Moore.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Raising the debt ceiling, once considered a routine duty of Congress to pay our bills, is now used by Republicans as an opportunity to force concessions from Democrats. As the only major industrialized nation with a debt limit, the United States is also the only major economy that routinely puts itself at risk of defaulting on our own debt and manifesting a self-inflicted economic collapse. The GOP will soon have a majority in the House, and they plan to hold the debt ceiling hostage while demanding cuts in essential programs like Social Security and Medicaid. Currently, the debt ceiling is slightly below $31.4 trillion. That limit is expected to cover federal borrowing needs until the early part of 2023. Failure to set the debt ceiling at the level necessary to meet borrowing needs jeopardizes the full faith and credit of the United States by preventing the Treasury from paying the government's bills. What does that mean? It could take the form of failing to pay interest on or redeeming Treasury bonds when due, failing to make scheduled payments for vital programs like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and veterans benefits. Even the threat of default is enough to impact financial markets, increasing government borrowing costs for all of us. If Congress were ever to allow the debt ceiling to actually collapse, the consequences would include interest costs throughout the world drastically increasing, investors would command higher rates on future Treasury bonds, expect interest rates on mortgages, student loans, car loans, credit cards, and other debt to skyrocket. A default would send shockwaves through the global financial markets and would likely cause credit markets worldwide to freeze up and stock markets to plunge. Banks would fail en masse. 80 million tax refunds, Social Security benefits, and other payments would be cut off every month. The dollar, which is now a worldwide currency, would fail without the full faith and credit of the United States backing it up, and other currencies would quickly take over. Dollars from around the world would then pour back into the U.S., causing massive inflation. All of this could trigger a severe economic depression, bringing job losses and serious hardship to millions of families in the United States and around the world. Some argue that eliminating the debt ceiling would prevent members of Congress from threatening the full faith and credit of the United States and holding our economy hostage in order to force action on other legislation, and it would allow fiscal debates to take place without the threat of a looming financial crisis. Others argue that Congress should retain control over the debt ceiling as a matter of congressional prerogative. Congress could address the debt ceiling through reconciliation, which provides for passage of legislation with a simple majority vote in both the House and Senate for budgetary issues. The lame duck session is the Democrats' last chance to pass such a bill. If you have opinions on the debt ceiling and whether Congress should act on eliminating it before Republicans take over the House, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally, with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars, and I want to share some ideas on what to do when you go through a breakup. I don't think there's nearly enough written on what to do for that, and it does seem that grief is part of the human experience. So, in order to live fully, we must love fully. So what do we do when we go through a breakup? Well, it's a lot healthier to express grief rather than repressing it. We know that when we cry, it helps us to release those emotions. And the more you grieve, the sooner the heartache will pass. If tears won't come, you might want to watch a really sad movie or something that just gets those tears going. And I've also found great solace in just sobbing in the bathtub and letting the water out and visualize all your sorrow going down the drain and being comforted by the Earth Mother. I usually give my water to the plants, but I figure this is water that needs to go. So try to stay calm. Save the hysterics for your best friend or your therapist. You know, if you act crazy, they're going to feel justified in the breakup. When things simmer down, you might want to write a letter where you express your thoughts rather than being overly dramatic and just say everything you want to say. So, yes, it is good to encourage the physical separation and not be, you know, texting and calling if it really is a breakup. And then during the period, you know, this is the time to work on yourself. Cleaning is something we do have some control over. Clean everything. You might want to have a closing ritual where you put a photo of your ex and a sprig of rosemary for remembrance in a bowl filled with sand or dirt, and then, you know, just like write the story. A really helpful thing my massage therapist suggested to me is write a list of 100 reasons why this is okay. And rather than talking about the breakup over and over again, I mean, at some point, you just need to put it on paper and get it out of you and write about what you learned from the relationship and what you want to bring in to the new relationship. I need to share that there is a homeopathic remedy for grief called Ignatia, Ignatia, not to be confused with echinacea. There's also a flower essence called Bleeding Heart. And rather than looking for the right person, this is your time to focus on being the right person, What did you learn from the relationship? What are you wanting to call in to the new one? And know that it's a really important time to take care of yourself. Your friends will help you get through this. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Hannah Stewart. Shannon Young has been our producer. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Claire Purnell, Juanita Hurtado, Alexis Kenyon, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown, and then a conversation about cross-cultural communication with Sam Fuqua and Le Manoir. That's coming up after these news headlines from the BBC.